It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour.
Hey everyone, I'm Mia. If you're here because of the podcast promotion that's my Tinder bio, welcome. It worked.
It did work. Hi everyone. Hey all of Mia's Tinder matches. I'm Maggie. And when I'm feeling really stressed out about my online classes, I try to channel three-year-old me who made my mom tie my baby bot Barney. That's like his wife or sister or something. I made her tie my baby bot Barney stuffed animal to my back like a backpack because I was really jealous that my older brother and sister were going to school and I wasn't.
Oh, and you're like, boy, was I a fool?
I was stupid. I used to literally just wear a stuffed animal tied on my back around the house because I wanted to go to school.
I used to like do like loop-de-loop fake cursive, and then I had like handwriting classes in Catholic school where they like made us.
Fucking nerds.
Yeah.
Nerds.
Nerds, wannabe school students. Well, everyone, welcome to our third week of Pride.
Woo!
Gay Christmas is going to last forever.
I am a little burnt out, but you know what? I am gearing up for that second half.
We are fully face painted in rainbow right now. We are only wearing rainbow flags.
I'm not. I'm just sweaty. I'm just kind of moist.
Yeah. So today we are talking about the future. But we're kicking it off actually with a blast from the past. We're going to play MySpace Bulletin Survey. After that, we'll dive into the main brew, queer futures. Let's talk about growing old. Are queer people finally allowed to do that yet?
That would be cool.
Finally, we'll wrap up this episode with a round of Smooch Slap Safe Pride Edition.
Excellent.
Yay!
Here we go. All right, so as you may recall, we have played MySpace mini bulletins before, which is to say we take questions, super basic ones that you would see on any old MySpace post, like how many tattoos do you have and what are you afraid of?
Who was your last text from?
Exactly.
They're always stirring the pot. That's what those surveys did.
Mm-hmm. Since the theme this week is queer futures, we thought we would do it looking at our own futures. So I am going to be asking Mia questions and she's going to be answering as me, and I will be doing it vice versa. So let's see if we can get it right.
Perfect. So how many kids do I want?
How many kids do you want? As many as you can possibly have. Am I right?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. If I could suspend my belief in the planet dying, overpopulation, just how unnecessary it is for me to have a ton of kids,
right,
my inability to take care of them, how awful it is to be a person in the world who exists, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah, I would love to have a ton of kids. So how many kids does Maggie want? Zero, and leave them alone about it.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Moving right along. This one I do have an answer to, though. So, Mia, what would I name my children that I'm not having?
So the answer that I selected...
Oh, no.
Is that Nancy would insist on naming any children you have an older man's name like Harry or Morty.
Yeah. Well, actually, so in Nancy's family, that's a dog thing. So typically in Jewish families, you only name, like you name babies after people who have passed, like ancestors mm-hmm. who have died. And it's, you're not really supposed to name a baby after someone who is alive and older. But yeah, Nancy's family, they kind of morphed that a little bit and now do it with dogs. So if I were going to name my kids, I feel like it would be a little bit of a crapshoot. But I love names that can very easily be kind of like silly, sweet, kind of like rough and tumble kid nicknames. So like Anthony, Antonia, like both of them work really well with Tony, which I think is a really sweet nickname.
Really cute name.
You know, like...
I love a Tony. I have a Tony that I love.
And, like, Gabriel, Gabe, like, any of that kind of stuff. Like, it's anything that is, like, really... You just imagine a little kid who's, like, fallen down a couple times.
Yeah.
That's the kind of vibe. But...
Whatever.
My dogs can have as many names as they want.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So what would you name your
kids? Yeah, what would I name my kids?
I feel like we've talked about this many times.
And I have no idea what I've said.
And it's changed many times. But
because I'm going to have 100.
So you have so many options. I know that you love the name Marlo because you nannied someone named Marlo who's very special.
Yes.
Which made me think, the first thing that popped in my head was, oh, Harlow?
Mm.
So I was like, anything in the O's.
I like the name Milo.
That was it. Yeah.
For any gender baby.
Yes.
Whatever they tell me at birth. Because babies can talk at birth, but they can only tell you their gender. And then they go back
pop
to
right
not talking.
And they're like, nothing!
Yeah. Leave me alone! Put me back! Yeah, but actually pretty accurate.
Word.
Okay, where would I want to retire?
I feel like, so Mia has lived in Massachusetts all her life, so I feel like Mia, but because she has, like, friends and family and loved ones in Florida, I get a little bit of a Florida vibe.
Yes.
But I also feel like you could be a little bit of a wild card and be like, I'm going to Alaska, you know? Like, I see you getting a little, like, having, like, a weird 3-year, like, I'm actually going to retire around no one.
Yeah. I know this this older midwife who used to live in Springfield and now, and like retired with her wife to like the Arctic Circle.
Wow.
And I'm like, honey,
that's not warm.
Why?
Yeah.
She's like, it's only daylight for 30 minutes. And I'm like, what? So I might do that. Yes, I would 100% retire in Florida. I would retire to St. Augustine, Florida.
Huh.
Just like old and beautiful and cool. And Paramore played there last night.
Wow.
So
wait, Paramore's done? Paramore played there last night.
Yeah.
Not like their possessive last night.
Oh,
ever.
God, I would be dead.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I was like, you're being really nonchalant about your favorite band.
I'm really coming into my own as a Paramore fan. Like, for many years, it was like a closet thing, and now I'm like really owning that.
Are identity. You coming out?
Yeah, I'm a Paramore fan. Where does Maggie want to retire? So, my answer for this is California, preferably inside the San Andreas Fault.
Okay, you're a little bitch.
Just, like, build a little nest and be like, fuck it, this is where I'm at.
You're right. It's my favorite place on the planet. The Bay Area is so deliciously nice. I miss it so very much. Honestly, just, like, even just, like, Central Coast, you could catch me, like, San Luis Obispo.
Right. Santa I don't
Barbara.
Know what these are. Yeah. Santa
but
Barbara,
you know
I've heard of.
It's all going to break off into the ocean, and it costs $2,000 billion to like have a smoothie there, so it doesn't matter. And Nancy is as pale as shit, so we're never going because her skin would fall off.
Do you think we're gonna like tether California back to the continental U.S.?
I don't know.
Like a bunch of bungee cords.
Yeah. So Mia, if I could do whatever job or hobby I wanted to with no worries about money, what would it be?
I said, this dog dang podcast.
It's true. That is what I do. Oh, I would just write bad articles and talk.
What would I do?
Honestly, this podcast part-time and then babies.
Yes.
The other part-time.
All kinds
which
of
is
babies.
To say, like, delivering them, loving them, taking care of them, but also taking care of your own, loving those.
I really love babies. Precious little nuggets.
Oh. They smell really good.
Oh, when we wash them up, they smell even better. Maggie, ideally, how do I want to die? How do I think I'm going to die?
I feel like you've told me before that you think you're going to drown.
No.
No? Maybe that was
I hope to God not. That's so scary.
Yeah, that does sound like one of the worst ways to go.
I have no idea how I'm going to die. Probably something stupid like a fucking anvil falls on my head.
Sounds dramatic.
Classic.
I feel like it's probably gonna be in your, like, hopefully in your sleep. Real casual, nice, old.
I sleep a lot, and I'm sure that I'll just continue to sleep more as I get older. So there's a pretty high likelihood that I will die in my sleep.
What does he say in Titanic? Oh, Rose, you're gonna die warm in your bed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be me. Thinking about some boy that I liked when I was 14, lost my virginity to him in the back of a car on a giant fucking ship.
That's I haven't heard that story from you yet.
Yeah. When I was with Leo.
How do you think I'm going to die?
Smothered in mayo.
Okay.
That's literally
You didn't even pause. You didn't even think about it. You just were like.
That's how I'd want to die if
that
I loved mayo.
That is not how I
want
to die. At all.
How do you want to die?
Smothered in mayo.
Just smothered.
Asphyxiation by mayonnaise.
Ugh. How do you think you're going to die?
I think I'm going to die. I, like, still, I, like, this is still kind of weird to say out loud, but, like, there are still times where I'm, like, but, like, am I really going to make it into my 30s?
You are.
I know I am, but it just doesn't really, like, feel yeah. like I'm going to. Well, in that case, I hope I die in my sleep. I'm very terrified of dying. Fire really? And water are my two ways that I very badly don't want to die, but I'll probably yeah. drown because I'm a little bitch, so.
I would rather freeze to death than burn.
Oh,
I
can't, no.
Really?
It takes a long time to freeze to death.
But burning, you have to, like, smell your own flesh burning.
That's fine.
I would rather freeze to death because you just, like, go into a coma eventually.
I actually would like to die by, like, a really, like, aggressive knockout to the head so that I'm unconscious for however long it takes.
Really?
Yeah. Except, hot take, Nancy's family lives to be, like, 212, right. So I'm fucked.
You better start eating, like...
liver.
They're always like, oh, I ate, drank a Coca-Cola every day and smoked 15 cigarettes and avoided men. I'm like, oh.
I'm like, oh, so you're just a dyke. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Cool, cool, cool.
Right.
Okay. So this week for our main brew, we are talking about queer futures for Pride Month. So what we mean by that is how we envision growing up as queer people, what we look for towards the future, and what it means to be a queer person now, seeing a really kind of a changing landscape of what it looks like to age while queer. So we thought we'd get nice and sentimental and a little sad.
Here we are. Welcome to Pride.
So Mia, I want to start out by asking, basically, it's a kind of a glorified version of what did you want to be when you were growing up,
mm-hmm.
but I guess a little bit more finite how and related to queerness. How did you envision your life, like when you were a little kid, before you were cognizant of your own queerness, how did you envision what your life was going to look like? Like, what did it look like before you even had the words to say, I'm a queer person?
Mm-hmm. I think whenever I saw, like, queer women growing mm-hmm. up, like, women who were, like, very butch in public. And I feel like I've read a lot of queer writers talk about this. Like, the first time they... Like, Alison Bechdel talks about it in Fun Home, mm-hmm. seeing the...
Ring of
like,
Keys.
Yeah, like, the mechanic. Is mm-hmm. that the... Yeah.
Or, like, she's a package delivery
woman. Yeah. So, like, in moments where I... Like, that where you're just completely, like, mystified and you, like, can't take your eyes off. And I remember feeling guilty because I remember being... Knowing, like... This person is not following some social norms and probably gets stared at a lot, but I need to stare at them right now and almost mm. like, I hope they understand that I'm not staring at them as in like, oh, you're not mm. following these norms, but rather like, I need to soak in as much of witnessing you exist as possible.
That's so interesting that you were very like cognizant of what impact your like behavior gaze. And vision and gaze was going to have on other people. That's really, like, what did you feel like? Did you feel like you were being ever looked at back? Like, do you remember, like, those moments where you would, like, make eye contact with a very butch woman?
Not when I was younger. Like, I remember being pretty young, like elementary school age and doing it. And getting that feeling of, like, oh, you're not supposed to stare. Or, like, I'm doing something wrong by staring mm-hmm. at somebody. But then as I got a little bit older, I was always, like, kind of a tomboy. So, and I developed pretty early. So then that combination meant that I was, like, a 13, 14-year-old who looked like a skateboarder boy. Mm-hmm. So, but was, like, also, like, woman lead at the same time, too. So I think there was, like, I think I read as queer in some ways because I, like, always wanted to look masculine in mm-hmm. some sense. So I feel like maybe as I got a little bit older, like, they kind of saw me. And I feel like I do that with younger people, too. I'll, like, see a kid and I'm just like, oh, like, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. We're having a looking moment where I see you as well.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds a little weird, but...
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I remember when I feel very similarly of, like, being young and seeing older women who were like that. And for me, it was also a gender thing. It had less to do with, like... I knew that it probably had something to do, like, with... Because I knew what lesbians were, but I didn't really know what, like, butch meant. And I didn't mm-hmm. know... Like, there were a lot of things I didn't know about gender. But, like, it was about gender variance that kind of, like, made that what it was. But, like, I feel like, for me, it was so important to, like... To feel like I could look at this person because, like, I always thought of it as, like, everyone ignored them. Mm-hmm. That, like, they were often, like, so invisible. Like, they were never pointed out. They were never, like, told... Like, no one ever told me that, like... They were beautiful people to look at. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for me, it felt like I could look at butch women as much as I wanted and no one would really notice.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I remember being really startled in the moments that I felt like I was, like, looked back at and being kind of like, whoa, Jesus, you know, like, I thought right. I was kind of in my own little world with this. It's just so sweet. The musical Fun Home, there's a song called Ring of Keys where she like sings about like seeing a older butch woman for the first time as like a 7-year-old. And in it, in the middle, she's like, why does like no one in here know that you're beautiful? Like, I'm the only one who can see that you're beautiful. Aww. And it, so for me, it was a lot about like being able to look at something that like, to me seemed very invisible, and it seemed like no one, it was almost like kind of like no one else was seeing that, like my interaction with this person. And now, like as an older queer person, when I see younger people, I understand, I never really understood like, do you notice me? Like being a little kid and looking at an mm-hmm. older butch woman and being like, do you see me? Like, do you, can't you tell that like I'm this way, even though I don't look like you and I'm not like you yet? But like now as an older person, like I am so, I can be so guarded in public about mm-hmm. like not making eye contact with people and like not drawing attention to myself and not like basically not having any kind of communication with people as I walk down the street, that like when a little kid like is staring at me, I have to like remind myself to like kind of like break a little bit and like connect for a second.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. But yeah, so thinking about like what I wanted to be when I grew up, I mean, I think that my first understanding of like wanting to grow up queer was wanting to grow up really independent from men.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, like, I don't think that those, that I don't think that not being gay and being independent from men are mutually exclusive. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, like, I don't think right. that. But when I was younger, it kind of, I don't know, there was something about it. I mean, my mom was like a really independent person and was a single mom, and there was something like ballsy and badass about like mm-hmm. her, the fierceness of her independence. And I remember like wanting to be like alone.
Yeah.
And like my idea of like, she defies a lot of like gender norms because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And like those things were like kind of synonymous to me growing up. So there was something about like being a woman who's alone, or like a woman who's independent, or a woman who's not tied to like male desire,
mm-hmm.
that I couldn't really put words to, but what that meant for me was like, I think that's actually part of queerness for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's something that's so important. You know, you see like in like, it's a joke, but like the push for Elsa to get a girlfriend, Elsa from Frozen, mm-hmm. a lot of people have come back and said, like a lot of like women have come back and said, well, like, why do you need her to have a girlfriend? Can't she just be like a princess that doesn't have anyone? And it's like, I understand what you're saying, that like we need more independent women, but like there are no gay women that we get to see like grow up and do that. There are right. so few of them. It's like, no, there actually is, like, yes, it's so tied together, but like that being, for some women, that is a part of their queerness. It's like when women say like, you can be a feminist without being a hairy lesbian. It's like, yeah, you can also be a feminist and a hairy lesbian.
Right.
And that's awesome too.
Right.
Like,
also, like, let's be real. The reason you don't want that is because you don't want your kids to watch a lesbian right. princess.
Right.
Yeah. And I think when I was younger, like I envisioned myself as like, I thought a lot about myself as like an aunt.
Hmm.
And mm-hmm. like wanting to grow up to be like the cool aunt. And now I'm like, yeah, because the cool aunt is a lesbian.
Right. Yes.
Maggie.
It's true. Did you think you wanted to get married when you were little?
I think probably when I was pretty little, I did. But I always remember saying, like, that I loved having divorced parents. I mean, I don't know if I said that phrase mm-hmm. like that. But I always really liked the situation I grew up in, because there was space. There was always space for me to feel how I felt about my dad and feel how I felt about my mom and take a break from one or both of them, and for my parents to really be people and not just like be this like unit that has to function and do this that way. And you mm-hmm. know, like there was like a lot of improv that was happening mm-hmm. in the way that our family got things done, and I was really attracted to that, the non-nuclear aspects of that.
Right.
So as I got older, like I used to joke, like in high school and middle school and stuff, like, oh, I want to be a divorcee.
Right.
Because then you get to, like, have somebody who helps you support kids, and your kids get other influences, but nobody's, like, there telling you what to do and how to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And now as I've gotten older, I'm like, really, Mia?
You could co-parent.
Yeah. Like, maybe you don't want to be divorced, because that is expensive and hard and sad sometimes. Yeah. But I think, like, in the ways that I think that we often talked about in gender studies, like, queering family units, queering mm-hmm. parenting, queering relationships, is, like, not just about, like, being gay, but about breaking down and deconstructing those models of that are rooted in heteronormativity. Right. It's, like, when I was younger, it wasn't necessarily about being gay, but it was about breaking tradition and breaking those norms down a little bit.
Right. Exactly. Like, kids can be such a... can be so telling about those things. Like, as a little kid, like, you know that there is something about, like, your family structure that was, like, non-normative, mm-hmm. that had a lot of really cool benefits, that really worked for you, that you could see, like, elements of wanting in your adult life. And the only way to talk about it is to say, like, I want to be a divorcee.
Right.
You know, it's
being,
like,
divorced is great. You know, but I only came into, like, consciousness as a person several years after my, you know, my parents got divorced right. when I was born. So by the time I, like, had a brain, mm-hmm. I was, like, 6 years old, you know, and by that, my parents had been divorced for 6 years, so they were really figuring that shit out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right, like, my language for talking about it was, like, oh, this is the way that you get to this.
Right. Like, I want that end goal, and so, like, how am I gonna get to it, I guess? And it's, like, and that's why I think it's so important to have, like, older, particularly queer role models, right. is to see that it does not have to be... They're like, right. really, you can be happy along the way, too.
Right.
Like,
totally. Will you share with us your first example of an older queer person that made you think about surviving past the age of 18? Do you have any now that make you think about surviving past the age of 27?
Yes and yes. So when I was little, my dad, a very good friend of my dad's, I think I've mentioned this before, very good friend of my dad's is gay. And I just, like, really... I don't even know if she would know this. Like, she still knows who I am and stuff. Like, she and my dad are still friends, but I haven't seen her in many, many years. And, like, to me, she's so gregarious, and she was so, like, my dad's such a tough guy, and he, like, takes up a lot of, like, space in rooms. You know, like, he is very energetic, he's very gregarious, and he's very, like, he's just interested in a lot of stuff, and he kind of commands a lot of presence. And so... like, it's not to say that my mom doesn't also command a lot of presence, but, like, she's my mom. Like, I had a whole role for her in my head as, like, being, like, my mom, and they were my parents. They were kind of a unit. And so there weren't a lot of, like, women that I knew who, like, were friends of my dad and also had a similar kind of commanding presence. Mm-hmm. Like, they were either, like, my aunts and my mother or no one. Mm-hmm. And so, like, she was, like, the first woman I met who could kind of, like, give him a run for his money, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I remember being, like, oh, like, that is appealing. Like, that has, like, it was, I don't know, to me it was, like, it was kind of the independent thing. It was, like, she was just, like, such a badass, and, like, mm-hmm. she always seemed to be kind of doing her own thing. And now I remember, like, how that turned going into... like, I didn't really feel like I had a lot in high school, but going into college, I remember I took a class in Hampshire, and I met a professor who's a butch lesbian who went to Mount Holyoke, married a woman who also went to Mount Holyoke, and is amazing, and is, like, she's, like, probably in her 40s. And it was the first time I've ever seen... it was, like, so startling to, like, be in a class of, like, things that I was interested in and wanting to be taking, and, like, see someone who really looked like me. And, like, I know that it's, like, there's – it's not to say that, like, I ever felt like I, like, couldn't super connect to my professors, but I'd never had a butch professor before, and I'd, like, mm-hmm. never seen someone like that, like, kind of, like, living a, like, a low-key professional life. And, like, it was so – it was just so cool to see, like, oh, yeah, you, like, have a wife, you live in Northampton, you and your wife, like – have jobs you really like, you have children that you fostered to adopt. Like, mm-hmm. I remember, like, seeing her, like, wear butch clothes. I taught her little kids how to swim, and, like, seeing her wear butch clothes on the pool deck and, like, pick up a screaming kid and be like, okay, well, I guess we're done with this for today. You know, mm-hmm. like, that kind of thing. Like, just seeing her, like, be normal, like a person,
yeah,
alive,
right,
looking like that is, like, still... Nancy still jokes that I'm in love with her, and she's not wrong.
I'm trying to think of the first time I saw a queer woman.
Like, you as an adult saw a queer, like, a queer woman that you could go, like, I'm queer, that's a queer woman.
Like, not even, like, the first, like, when did I first, because I kind of acknowledged my own queer feelings before I, like, had any queer experiences. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I may have felt the things before I knew they were the things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think nuns are gay.
All of them. All nuns are gay.
A lot of nuns seem gay, mm-hmm. are gay. Maybe it's that independence thing too, that I teased out in my mind of like, they just all live together and they like hang out, mm-hmm. and they don't have husbands who tell them what to do. Like,
also a lot of nuns actually are gay.
A lot of nuns are gay.
Yeah.
So I definitely had some gay nuns in school. But I think I nannied a lot in college, mm-hmm. and in high school. And for some reason, I ended up in this, like, specialty where I was often a family's first nanny or babysitter, mm-hmm. like, besides the parents. Like, a lot of the families that I've worked for, I would take care of their kids before their grandparents ever came and watched the kids alone.
Oh, wow.
Which is really weird and a really nice experience. And I feel like maybe it's because of that that lack of connection that they're kind of able to be like, I just have to let it go and let this strange 20-year-old person come in and do this. So
right.
I've worked for several families that were two mom families.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 18, I think, when I started working for one. Their son was 3 months old. And they lived in this beautiful house. They're hairdressers. They own a salon together still.
Oh my God.
And they had this unbelievable house. And it was like the cushiest babysitting job ever. Like, the kid was amazing. He was so cute. They would always like make me dinner. They'd always like leave me food and be like, oh, we just whipped something up for you. And it's like a beautiful salad with like every,
oh my God,
all Roy G. Biv kinds of gay going on in there. And they had like really cute dogs and they had a pool, and they'd be like, sometimes in the summer I'd come over to babysit and they'd be like, yeah, well, he's asleep and the baby monitor works outside, so like, feel free to go swimming. So I would go to work, go swimming, and just have the baby monitor, and I'd just get out of the pool when he woke up. It was really fun, but I like kind of played house when I was there.
Right.
And like imagined like, wow, like I could live this life. Like, they just had such a beautiful life.
Right.
And I feel like at the time, like, I didn't know that I wanted to marry anybody. I didn't know if I wanted to marry a woman. I didn't know if I wanted to have kids or where I wanted to live. You know, like, I still feel weird about the suburbs. But their house, their life was so full.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were no empty spaces on the walls. Like,
right.
Things were hung up. It was a real life. It was really lived in. And one of them had been married previously to a different woman and had, like, a 10-year-old. And sometimes, wow, I would watch the 10-year-old and her brother. And so it was really cool, too, to see, like, people's lives change a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that those kinds of things where you could get divorced, meet somebody new, and have a different kid, have another kid. Like, those, like, anything that happens to straight people could happen to not straight people.
Right.
And that was, like, the first time that I realized that and really got to see that. And, like, they were, like, really open about their relationship and would talk about like, oh yeah, well, like, we started dating, like, they told me all about how they started dating, like, one of them had never dated women but was always like, yeah, maybe, and then like met her wife, and then they just like, no questions asked, like, they were just, and the way that they talked about like her sexuality was just like so not biphobic and, mm-hmm. just like loving and nurturing, and it was just like just beautiful.
Damn.
Yeah.
So that sounds like maybe that might have been the one where you were like, I could live past 18.
Right. That was definitely like my first, like, oh, I could live past 18. But my first, like, I was trying to think of like the first time I remember, mm-hmm. seeing a queer woman or like representation of it that wasn't just like two straight women for male gaze.
Or like a woman who dies.
Yeah.
Right.
It must have just been a movie or TV or something. A Girls, yeah, Gone Wild infomercial. I don't know.
I don't remember the first.
I wish I could.
I remember
seeing... Should we get hypnotized?
Maybe we should. I do remember seeing, like, shitty lesbian stuff when I was little that I didn't really care. Like, I would see, like, two very clearly straight women have, like, really hyper whatever sex and be like, okay, fine. You know, like, I just didn't really give a shit. I do remember, though, that The Kids Are All Right in all of its problems.
Oh, yeah.
I loved, like, pretty much more than anything. Like, Annette Bening was another one where I was like, oh, okay, like, yeah, I'm going to figure, cool, it out. Like, this, yeah, is going to be fine. It's just, I still take it so seriously. Like, Nancy and I have joked about this before that, like, I don't, like, you know, I'm friendly to people when I pass them on the street always. Like, I'll, like, smile or say hello or, but in particular, like when I see older queer women, I get like very, or like very visibly older queer women, I like get nervous mm-hmm. when I'm like walking up and I like see that they're coming and I'm like, oh my God, okay. And I like, I'm like really nervous about how I'm going to smile. Yeah. And sometimes I'll like smile or do that thing where you're like, hey.
Like, yeah. Like, oh really my God, quiet. I did that to someone when I was eating my salad walking over here.
Oh my God.
Just like, my cool neighbor.
Hi. But it's like, and it makes me so like, it's so rewarding to have an older queer woman, like, smile back at you when mm-hmm. they see you in that way. But when an older queer woman, like, kind of is dismissive or is just, like, goes on about her day or, like, checks her phone, I'm like, I am
I need
crushed.
You.
Like, I need you. And it's so unfair that, like, you can't just be, like, having a bad day.
Right.
Like, I need you to be...
everything that could be my life. You are my right. crystal ball. fuck a ring of keys. You're my crystal ball. Totally.
You mean yeah. Rhea Butcher.
Rhea Butcher and Cameron Esposito actually
yes.
do a lot for me. Okay, so actually, queer adult examples in the media that we look up to. So Cameron and Rhea are really one for me.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. Like, they're funny, they're tender, they're successful, they are political, they stand up for things, etc. But also there's something about the way that they talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it really feels like those two people should have always... bent near each other.
Mm-hmm. I love the way they talk about, I love how their comedy often involves their exes, like talking about mm-hmm. their exes, talking about like things like that, because it reminds you that it's like, I think there's this assumption, or like the way that it often plays out in the media is that like when two women get together and it's a really good match, they're like never gonna have sex again and then they're always gonna get along mm-hmm. when in fact frequently it can be a little reverse of that. You have plenty of sex and you frequently don't get along. But I mean, I completely agree. And also, I mean, like, I think it is so important to have, like I'm not trying to say that, like, really shitty, like, hyper-sexualized femme representation of lesbian couples in the media is enough. But, like, having a butch-butch couple at mm-hmm. all is, like, so unbelievably lovely.
Totally.
Like, again, it doesn't mean that, like, I'm not saying, like, we have too many femme couples, because no.
Right. We need all right. kinds of queer couples. Yeah, sometimes I feel bad for thinking it, but I'm like, no, it's important to me to see queer relationships fail sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Because that means you get to a point of, like, vulnerability and knowing somebody well enough to figure out that it's not working, and to, I kind of, it almost is important to me to see that because it means to me that queer people are not going to just settle for meeting another queer person.
Yeah.
That there's still autonomy and choice and, like, well, I still deserve to actually be with somebody that's a good fit for me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that may change and that, you know, like, that it's, mm-hmm. it's real life.
Yeah.
It's not just like, well, we were both gay, so then we were done. You know, it's like, there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, YouTube couples, lesbians. There are so many videos of lesbian mm-hmm. couples, and, like, they usually all break up, and it's very dramatic and weird. But, like, they do the girlfriend tag and whatever. And sometimes I find myself, this is current, sometimes I find myself watching YouTube videos of, like, 18-year-olds with their girlfriends doing the girlfriend tag. And they're just so in love and so excited, and it's so comforting. And, like, just seeing, like, day-to-day bullshit life of, like, these teenagers who are just like, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm gay. I'm like, I want to live. And, like, yeah, they're younger than me. So it's almost like, rather than like, oh, that makes me want to grow old, it's like, that makes me want to find that, mm-hmm. whatever age that ends up being at. Like, oh, yeah, I eventually want to, like, love someone and mm-hmm. be in, like, a queer relationship and not be in nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
One day. Eventually.
Eventually. Also... okay, something that made me, a way that I lived out my future queer fantasies, The Sims.
Yeah. Yes.
Playing The Sims and having my wife mm-hmm. and our kids and dogs and building my dream house mm-hmm. and just, like, waking up and kissing my wife and going to work
mm-hmm.
and, like, our kids growing up and, like, playing that video game actually... yes, I need to mention that.
I love that.
Actually did so much for me to be able to, like, visualize. I mean, mm-hmm. of course, you know, I'm not getting off on people woo-hooing.
Oh, you're not?
Sometimes. But that actually meant a lot to me, that the mm-hmm. fact that The Sims allowed you to have whatever gender relationships. I mean, mm-hmm. the fact that I was able to be like, oh, I'm going to have a wedding and I'm just marrying a woman and no one, that's not a thing. Like, there's mm-hmm. just no, yeah. I almost feel like we're spending the episode of Queer Future talking about childhood and adolescence, but it's like, that's how I visualized my future.
Well, yeah. And also, I mean, like, that is, there's no other, like, I can talk about, like, the people who I look to as kind of role models or guideposts now, but, like, there's so much stuff that I'm, like, not going to claim I know what it's going to look like, but I can look back and, like, how I was shaping, like, how my current queerness was shaped by what I wanted my queerness to look like when I was little, and, mm-hmm. like, look at, like, how that is shaping the decisions I'm making now. Mm-hmm. Because, like, when I was little, like, for me, queer futures were pretty much exclusively gay men. I know I've talked about, like, women that I, like, saw when I was younger and, like, how special that was. But, like, in terms of, like, the most contact that I had, I was a total theater kid. I loved Broadway. I wanted to be on Broadway. I loved the whole thing. My aunt and uncle, who were living in New York at the time, worked in theater. And so, like, they were around a lot of gay men mm-hmm. all the time. And so, like, for me, older gayness was that. And, in fact, like, older gayness was, like, fraught. Like, my uncle and aunt lived in New York from the 70s until, like, the mid-2000s, and 48 of their friends died of AIDS within the course of about 4 years. Like, they were the, like, through my aunt and uncle were, like, the first time that I ever learned that, like, growing older gay to me at the time, because I didn't know about it and I didn't really know what it meant, was just kind of precarious. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just kind of, like, scary.
Right.
And so, like, I think it's really interesting now to be one of the first generations that has, like, multiple older people, like, some of the baby boomer generation and Gen Xers in particular, who, like, are older than, like, are around since, right. like, better treatment for HIV has come along and, like, since, like, preventative
any,
stuff.
Any treatment.
Anything.
Acknowledgement.
Like, not just, like, yeah. gross negligence.
Right. Well, yeah. let's talk about that then. Like, let's talk about, like, what does it mean to have, like, a lost history with that lost generation?
Do you ever feel like as a gay woman that it feels kind of like a lost history, but kind of like, I want to be part of the conversation, but I don't really mm-hmm. get to say anything because mm-hmm. like, it's different for us. Not that we don't have lost histories as well, but right. that it's a really different
absolutely
thing.
Yeah, I totally do. Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know. I also just feel like, I almost feel like people in queer spaces and in not queer spaces now almost feel like, okay, yeah, well, like, right. it's done. But it's not.
No, it's not.
You know, and I feel like often in my circles, we don't talk about HIV, we don't talk about AIDS very much because you're saying, like, I mean, it's just, the fact is, it's just not as big of a risk.
Right. If you have preventative measures and if you have treatment, if you have it, you know?
Right.
Like.
Right. But I mean, even just for, like,
right.
the kinds of sex that I'm typically having.
Oh, you mean like, yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, like the risk for like lesbians, if we're right. going to use that term, you know, typically, yeah. I'm saying typically on purpose, because the kinds of body parts that lesbians can have is varied.
Right.
But, you know, like, and even regardless of that, there are ways, like HIV is not impossible in lesbian communities. Like, I want to make that clear that I'm not saying right. that.
Basically, like, HIV is not only spread through anal sex, and anal sex is not exclusive to gay male communities.
Thank you.
Let's be very clear about all yes. those things.
Yeah, but, like, all of those things are true. But it is just not as prevalent.
Right.
And it's, so yeah. my space is primarily made up of queer women. And so I think that conversations about queer sex in my groups of friends don't often talk about that. Mm-hmm. As much as we maybe should. In fact,
we often don't talk about safe sex at all.
Right.
Like.
Yeah.
Not, and it's not to say that, like, we don't, like, people in our friend group, like, aren't having sex in lots of different ways with people with penises, vaginas, having sex, again, in tons of different ways. Like.
Yeah.
But we still don't really talk about safe sex that frequently. Right. It's kind of, like, a normalized part of, at least I found, like, you know, like, the Mount Holyoke lesbian scene was, like, not talking about it.
Not at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Or being like, oh, dental dams.
Haha.
You know, like, it was, like, a joke.
Yeah, dental dams are a joke.
Right.
And they're not. They're weird, but they're not.
Right.
Y'all heard our healthcare episode. Like, we don't particularly think that healthcare in the current state in the US, like, does a good job of meeting the needs of queer people. Mm-hmm. But in this particular sense, like, I remember, like, the first time that I, like, learned about the AIDS crisis, I mean, I don't know how old I was, because they tend not to talk about that in Catholic school. So it honestly might have been, like, late middle school, early high school. But whenever I did learn about it, I remember that being a moment of, like, really becoming disenchanted with, like, the state of the world. I remember being pretty young, because that was the first time, like, something, like, shook me, and I was like, wow, people can just not care about other people.
Right.
Like, that was the first time that I really, like, started to lose, like, a sense of hope in, mm-hmm. like, a system being altruistic, mm-hmm. like that. And I don't think that that system is not altruistic just because of healthcare being inaccessible or expensive or all the ways that I do think it is. There's no denying that the AIDS crisis was a purposeful negligence,
mm-hmm.
rather than like, oh my God, we can't keep up and no. it's the development of drugs. Like,
no, Nancy Reagan.
Yes.
May she not rest in peace. Yeah. Like, no. I mean, it's so also like what it did, like getting back to the idea of queer futures too, like being a little kid, the way that it painted gay male communities mm-hmm. and gay male growing oldness was so much like it was either a kind of like ableist and horrible and homophobic look into death and sadness and like kind of just like bleakness. Or on the other hand, like as we know, like the kind of common stereotype of gayness just being fabulousness. So it's mm-hmm. like there's kind of, it's like a very polar thing to say like, okay, there's either like, it's either like all glitter and dancing and drag queens or it's like death.
So Maggie, what do you think about like feelings about the future of queer community as we're talking about trying to, you know, remember the importance of like queer historical events and what that means about queer future and projections of queer future and as like an identity, as a political group with being such varied experiences and needs?
For me, I feel kind of unsure. Like one of the things I wanted to talk about, which is I think we've talked about before and we talked about with some of our friends and kind of the word that I have used about it before is lesbian melancholy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not saying it's like only specific to lesbians, but I think there is something very specific to queer women about this phenomenon of like very long-term invisibility of like mm-hmm. lesbians being invisible for so long and invisible in the media and kind of invisible in people's lives. Like
right.
where the fuck are the lesbians? Fine. Where do they live? Like this is a gay neighborhood and this is a gay neighborhood, but like where do the lesbians live?
Yeah.
Like
Northampton.
Northampton, Massachusetts.
Like that, like that may be the first time that I saw a lesbian or heard about it.
Right.
It was my parents like joking about like crunchy, hairy lesbians in Northampton.
Right. Like, and
little did they know.
And there's so much of lesbianism, which is like true because of women and like women's like, what's the word for it? Women's like predisposition to autoimmune diseases. Basically, like women don't get as good of healthcare. Typically, lesbian communities historically have had significantly less money because mm-hmm. it's been women. And like, lesbians get sick. Like, we know this about, like, breast cancer crises in lesbian communities.
Well,
like,
also, having children is protective against breast cancer.
And ovarian cancer. Breastfeeding. Like, yeah. there are so many things that, and, like, so also,
communities
like,
of large amounts of women that are not having children.
And women who are at a higher rate of, like, smoking and drinking and other things yep. that are, like, higher to cause illnesses. Like, there's, the way I've talked about it before, which is kind of joking and kind of not, is the idea of, like, settling as a teenager into the feeling that I was going to grow up into an older woman who, like, I was going to live maybe by myself, maybe with a partner, probably with an old dog. And, like, that was going to be it. Like, that was as good as it was going to get. And, like, you kind of, like, and it was, there were things that were going to be sad and it was kind of going to be hard forever. But, like, you just had to kind of, like, get yourself comfortable with, like, that being your baseline. And so, like, you have that. Like, you have the kind of, like, mixed up mess, which is like lesbian melancholy and feeling like this baseline invisibility sadness, but also shared experience within it. And then seeing people like Janelle Monáe and like mm-hmm. Lena Waithe and like some of them, honestly, even Ellen DeGeneres, like some of the most joyful mm-hmm. women who love women on like out in the media who are like so happy. And it makes me, that's when I say like it's unsure, is that like I feel like I sealed myself up for kind of just like, well, I'm just gonna be an old woman with a dog who wears overalls mm-hmm. and now it's like
You could be happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I think that's a really important point to make in this conversation, too. It's like, there's something about representation and about seeing your story. And our lives are hard. They're going to be hard a lot of the times. But they're also, like, really special and really beautiful. And, like, seeing dynamic portraits of people's lives, I've mentioned in this episode, like, has been important to me to see relationships fail, to see people fight and argue because that's what real life is going to be like. Mm-hmm. But also, like, there is so much joy in, like, there's something so special about a queer relationship wherein you both have an understanding of a kind of experience. Your socialization mm-hmm. is similar or shared. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh yeah, people told me I shouldn't play sports when I was a kid.
Right.
If I'm dating a cis dude, they're never going to understand what I'm talking about.
Right.
So there's something so beautiful and there's something, there's like a joy in commiserating about yeah. a lot of the difficulties of womanhood that make a greater space for joy, I think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's also sort of, I think, part of what has scared me a lot about intimacy with women is that this, like, oh my God, you're going to understand me too well, and I need to put space between that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, therapy.
As a queer woman who, like, makes community with queer women, like, where do you see, like, where do you see queer womanhood fitting into, like, this hellfire of a political landscape? Like, how does it, like, what do you think it's going to look like?
I know. I think that something that brings me a bit of comfort is how many queer women I know, particularly white women, who were angry about pussy hats.
Yes!
Like, the fact that people were mad about it actually brought me a lot of comfort. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, white women are a big problem. Mm-hmm. White women elected Trump. But at least some of these white women that I share community identifiers with and some that I do not are mad about this bullshit. Mm-hmm. And are saying, no, that's not the narrative of my resistance. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to me. And, like, that's nice to see.
Yeah.
So that's something.
We spend a lot of time talking about, like, really fucked up stuff that happens in queer communities. And I'm not saying it's not important to do. But, like, it is nice to take a moment and say, like, no, there are reasons, like, why we choose to be around queer women, even though queer women can be the worst. Mm-hmm.
Like- yeah, totally. So there is something special about these communities, and there's something special about the meaning making that mm-hmm. can happen when you feel understood by the people around you and preserving history. And
yes,
because guess what, when I'm 20 years older, I'm gonna have met a lot more people. I'm gonna right. have built my community, and that community is gonna have expanded a lot bigger than I can even imagine right now. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I love when we do sappy episodes like this. It makes me really happy. It just makes me, there are times when it is, like, so fucking miserable, and then there are times when it makes me so happy to be queer. Like, mm-hmm. there are times when it makes me so happy to, like, turn off the light and look across at Nancy and be mm-hmm. like, oh my God, I, like, know the person that I share a bed with. Like, I know that, like, people know their partners and shit, but, like, I know the person I share a bed yeah. with. She got socialized in some very similar ways. And that's a right. cool thing sometimes. I love looking around the room at my friends and being like, you know what? Like, we have very few examples of how to do this, let alone do this functionally. But, like, we're gonna figure it out. Like, we're going to live to be older queer women, mm-hmm. queer people.
So we didn't mention this, but part of the influence for doing this episode during this time is that during the Pride Parade, there was seniors, one group of seniors had signs that said, "Do you see me?" And I, like, I'm trying to turn up.
She cried.
I got really emotional. It was, like, really special to see, because I feel like a lot of times you'll see, like, oh, we're a senior housing coalition, and it's just, like, the nursing home itself mm-hmm. is trying to promote yes. diversity and being an ally. But when actual seniors are looking into our eyes, like, oh my God, you're getting to go to a parade that I didn't get to go to when I was your age. So, like, yeah, it, like, you know, we talk about, like, wow, there's a generation, but I don't actually interact with that generation that frequently. And mm-hmm. so being able to fucking see them and then have them be like, do you see me? I'm like, yes, I see you. And I am going to cry and make a podcast episode yes. about seeing you. And my final closing thought is that a friend of mine posted a picture of herself on Instagram one time, And the caption was, if 13-year-old me could see how dope I am now, she would freak the fuck out. And I think, something along those lines. And I think about that phrase sometimes where I'm like, yeah. If, like, 10-year-old me, who was, like, making a gay family on The Sims, could see me now, like, she would be so stoked.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really nice.
I think if 10-year-old me saw me now, she'd be a little surprised.
Welcome back. So, this is our last mini game. What?
This is our final mini game ever.
Oh my fucking god. Okay. Hey everyone, now we're gonna play an episode. No. We're just gonna play another episode during the recording of this one. God damn it.
Okay, here we go. Whew.
Okay.
Fourth time's a charm.
Okay, now we're gonna play a round of Smooch Slap Safe, Pride Edition. Maggie, do you want to start us off with your first Smooch Slap Safe? I don't think I really have to explain this to the listeners. It's fuck, marry, kill, but a little bit gentler.
Okay, I'm so ready. So, starting out Pride Edition with pretty gay boys.
Ooh!
Carson Kressley from the original Queer Eye. Jonathan from this Queer Eye with the hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Gus Kenworth. The cute snowboarder. Skier. There is a very cute gay man on the Olympic team who's not Adam Rippon.
Yes, yes, yes. So I almost just said Carson Kressley and didn't answer.
Just Carson. Yes.
I pick him because I do love him.
Yes.
I feel like I always agree with his stuff on, his critiques on RuPaul.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, he wears, sequin blazers that don't fit quite as well as Ru's, but still are, doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's my smooch. Slap is this athlete.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't know, I'm like...
oh, a jock?
Cool. Yeah, right. Yeah. Slap a jock. And then Safe is Queer Jonathan.
Yeah, we'll bench him.
Yeah. All right, Smooch Slap Safe, Pride Edition, the Ellens. Ellen DeGeneres, Ellen Pompeo... Ellen Page.
Is Ellen Pompeo gay?
No.
Oh, but okay.
She just has a raspy voice, Maggie. Not all of us women with raspy voices are gay.
Dude, you're not gay.
I'm a fraud.
This is the big reveal of the whole season. That me is not queer at all.
I've been doing
method acting. So, the Ellens. Ellens cubed.
Yes.
I would say that I am going to... man, I guess I'm gonna smooch Ellen Page.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna safe Ellen DeGeneres, and I'm gonna slap Ellen Pompeo. But I don't really like Ellen Page that much.
I don't know. She's kind of a pain in the ass. Okay.
It's like, we get it. You're fucking gay. Is that what people think about us?
Wait. Wait, you're slapping Ellen Page?
I'm slapping Ellen Pompeo.
Oh.
And I'm smooching Ellen Page.
Yeah.
But reluctantly.
Yeah. Okay, Juno. Next.
Okay. This was Pride Edition, so Mia, Smooch Slap Safe, Vodka, TD Bank, and that new rainbow grilled cheese that they came out with this year where all of the cheese is, rainbow colored.
Wow. Okay. Slap Vodka, I hate it. It's gross potato water.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. No, I can't.
I know.
Okay. Vodka's safe because I'll drink it in a pinch if you've got a good enough mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And a vodka tonic is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Smooch a grilled cheese because what? Slap TD Bank.
Great.
Okay. I've got to edit mine real quick.
Why was it that?
I mentioned TD Bank.
Oh.
And there's so many other banks to choose from. Okay. So, Maggie, smooch slap safe. This is my favorite one that I did.
Okay.
White dude with dreads selling rainbow merch at Pride. Wells Fargo bank float. My ex who was mean to me at the Pride after party.
Ah! Yeah, okay. Just so y'all know, we were at Boston Pride this past weekend, and there was a white dude with dreads
all selling... All three of these things happened.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend, who was also a white girl with dreads, kept yelling, rainbow flags, pussy grabs back. I was like, Why is she just yelling pussy grabs back? Like, it didn't appear that she had anything that said pussy grabs back, and no. I also hate that as, like, a, like,
yes.
Like, that's not a revolution.
Okay, I'm gonna slap Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
This is so bad. No, I don't know. Okay, I guess I'm gonna...
You're gonna switch my ex who was mean to me at the Pride After Party?
No! I mean, she's friendly, but she's not friendly to you, so we can't have that. That makes her, by default, not friendly. Fuck. Okay. We're gonna safe. Nope, I'm still in the same.
Are you gonna slap them all?
I might have to just slap them all. I might just have to slap them all.
Do you have a third?
I do. Okay, so category is white straight women who you're always really concerned that they might say something fucked up,
okay,
but you're not sure, so you're just on the edge of your seat.
Mm.
Amy Poehler.
Mm.
Tina Fey.
Whoa.
Kristen Wiig.
Okay. Slap Tina Fey. Smooch Kristen Wiig. No, smooch Amy Poehler. Safe Kristen Wiig.
Yeah. That didn't take you a minute.
No.
No.
I don't trust any of those bitches. Smooch, slap, safe. Leslie Feinberg. Judith Butler. Eve Kosofsky-Sedgwick.
Okay, I see you with that full
Sedgwick.
Name.
Sedgwick.
Sedgwick. Okay, slap Judith Butler. Mm. And here's why.
Mm.
She can kind of get on my nerves.
Yep.
So, and then I think I'm into smooch Leslie Feinberg.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to safe Eve Sedgwick so that one day I can know what the fuck she's talking about.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. No one knows.
Yeah. All right. That's cool. It.
That's that. Thank you guys for tuning in to our third out of four episodes for Pride Month. We are almost done, we promise. But we are capping it off with marriage.
Gay marriage.
We're very excited. It is the, what is it, third or fourth year anniversary? When did it pass? 2015?
Siri, gay marriage. Gay marriage in the United States.
I think it was 2015,
ma'am.
Okay, so it's been 3 years since gay marriage passed. I think we all still have a lot of feelings about it. We talked queer futures, so now let's talk about this very finite point of some people's queer futures.
Woo!
If you have any thoughts about gay marriage that you want to pop into the DMs, please do it.
Yeah, any marriage proposals would be warm welcome.
So yeah, we will see you guys next week.
Bye!